Welcome to episode 98 of the Microsoft Cloud IT Pro podcast, recorded live on November 2nd, 2018. This is a show about Office 365, Azure, and the IT Pro and end user side of life, where we discuss a topic or recent news related to Office 365 or Azure and how it relates to you as an IT Pro. I'm Scott.
And I'm Ben.
In this show, we get into the latest release of the Office customization tool, some of the new enhancements to Intune licensing, and talk about some of the latest resources to help you create engaging SharePoint sites.
Wow, that was fancy. This whole new live intro thing is kind of fun.
Yeah, put me on the spot.
Yeah, I like that. Everybody's had to listen to me do the intro for like the last 10 or 15 episodes. It was your turn.
Yeah, sacrifices must be made.
Yes. So how are you doing on this? It's another one. Last Friday we recorded, it was kind of cloudy too. On another cloudy Friday for me.
It's good. You know, we're officially into winter here in Florida. So it's only like 80 degrees every day. Really nice.
Yes, absolutely. I like these 2 days of the year.
They are really beautiful.
I had something else I was going to... Oh, you got a new mic too. So everybody needs to tell Scott how much better he sounds now that he got a new mic.
Yeah, no, new microphone, fresh cup of coffee. I'm all sugared up from Halloween. Let's do it.
Sweet. My kids are old enough, they don't let me eat their candy anymore. They like memorize what's in their bag. Daddy, where'd that piece of candy go? I don't know. Must have fallen out.
Yeah. Well, you do the adult thing. You buy your own bag.
So I bought what I thought was going to be enough that we'd have some extras. We didn't have any extras. We had like 10 pieces of candy left by the time it was all said and done.
Yeah. Should have come to our house. Nobody came by. We had lots extra.
Did you? I had 200 pieces of candy, maybe a little more. Might have been like 220. We had like 10 left.
Well, we bought 400 pieces of candy and we gave away about 10.
Wow. Or you just need to bring your candy to our house next year.
Yeah. You know, my wife's a teacher. She takes it to school and they use it as treats to sugar the kids up before they go home. So I have no problems with that because the candy is not in my house, which means I don't eat it.
Perfect. Mover is a cloud migration company that specializes in moving your company's files from file servers or cloud storage like Box, Dropbox, and Google into Office 365. Their patented technology makes Mover the fastest OneDrive file migrator in the world. Moving dozens of terabytes of data a day is a breeze. Use Mover's free, industry-leading migration guides or ask for a managed migration and they'll take the lead. With Mover, all your data is secure and intact. Running completely behind the scenes, you don't lose time, money, or hair while you transfer. Scan, plan, migrate, report. Migrations that don't suck with Mover. Visit mover.io for more info. All right. So aside from candy and sugar and making kids hyper, we have some news. Like there's actually been more news. It's been like a month since Ignite and the news, believe it or not, has not stopped. So we figured we'd catch you up on a few of the news items that have come out since the Ignite conference over the course of the last month or so.
Yeah. So there's some interesting things that have been released. So in the past, we talked about like the Office XML configuration tool that was on GitHub. And I think we mentioned how that was being deprecated in favor of a new Office customization tool. So basically something that can help you create those config.xml files. And then you can use those files with ODT or the Office deployment tool to go ahead and actually build your installation sources to put everything together. So that tool, that Office customization tool, has officially GA'd in its new home. So it's just sitting out there at config.office.com. It's kind of sort of similar to what it does before. So if you ever played with it in the past, you can go ahead and take an existing config.xml and load that existing configuration in and then make changes to it. Or you can create a brand new configuration and then go ahead and export it just as an XML file and push it out to where you need to have it. So the really cool thing about this is it's a nice GUI-driven way to build those XML files, because they can be a little bit weird sometimes once you start doing inclusions or exclusions of applications within your Office installations, or if you're thinking about the ways that you might set up something like your installation for update channels, what versions you want to deploy, where you want to deploy updates from. Are you going to come from the public CDN? Are you going to do that from an internal source? What type of logging do you need? All that good kind of stuff. And now it's just straight up built into that tool. So Microsoft has released some documentation on that for kind of how to get started and how to run through. To be honest, I don't know that anybody needs to read the documentation for how to use the tool. You'd probably just want to read the documentation for what are the settings in the XML file so you can understand what's happening as you're flipping all those switches back and forth. So what you do is you use this tool. Like I said, you create your XML file, and then you can take that out and use it with ODT or the Office Deployment Tool as a follow-on step to having the configuration file to actually go ahead and download and generate an installation source. This does not negate the need to still do things like assessments and planning before you deploy Office. So if you're just sitting and thinking about doing Pro Plus today, yeah, you've still got to think about requirements. You're going to do 32, 64. What applications do we actually need? What are the hardware requirements? What are the licensing aspects we need to worry about? When you start thinking about updates, do we want to pull from the CDN? Do we want to pull locally? What are the criteria there? Do we need to maybe take a look through like the readiness toolkit to see if our applications are ready to go? So you still get to do all that stuff and then make a choice about how you deploy after that to go ahead and run things through. So pretty nifty. Nice to see it out there. One of the things that got lost when Microsoft did this, which it doesn't look like they're going to bring back at this time, and I would really like to see them do, is the old GitHub repo actually had a way to run your configuration and do your download and everything and generate a single MSI. So as long as the installation source was under, it was a certain size, like under 2 gigs, it could just generate a big monolithic MSI that then you could use for deployment or make it pretty easy to load into other tools or keep out on file shares, things like that. So you're doing like GPO deploys or whatever. So now, you know, we're back to the all up installation source and things like that. So I hope Microsoft brings something like that, maybe to just ODT at some point would be really nice, but new tool, new thing to play around with. If you're doing customized Office 365 click to run installations today, you might want to just even load your existing configuration in there and get it up to you, the latest schema, latest you know, flags and features and all the things that need to happen there.
Yeah, this is pretty slick. I was playing around with it. So I didn't realize all the application preferences you could set as well, looking at as you kind of walk through this and the different configuration options. Like you said, it really is pretty straightforward in terms of how you go through and set it all up, configure it all. But there's a ton of application preferences you can set now too.
Yep. And that stuff's been there the entire time, but now it's been surfaced up in a little bit of a nicer way inside that tool. And I think it's discoverable enough within the tool to just go ahead and, like I said, go to config.office.com and start kind of figuring it out. And then what you can do is actually go read the XML references after that to see why it made those decisions and what some of those flags are doing. I think it's a good way to kind of back into it and figure out what's going on.
Yeah, definitely. All right. Very nice. Time to go spend some time playing with that.
Yeah. Installing Office, everyone's favorite pastime.
Yeah, I know. Well, I have a Mac, so I've got to go like build VMs to install it and stuff.
Oh, well, you know, you've got some more stuff coming up for the Mac as well. Microsoft's been iterating pretty heavily there.
Yes, they have been. So there are some new admin controls for Outlook on the Mac.
Yeah. And that's a really weird thing to hear somebody say out loud. Admin controls on the Mac.
I know. How bizarre is that?
Who saw that one coming? Not me.
Yeah. I was just looking through this because I haven't read a ton about it yet, but there's kind of a few main bullet points in this one that starting with version 16.17 on the Mac, you can do things like automatically add Office activation email addresses in Outlook on the Mac, 16.8, you can specify email addresses or domains to Office 365 mailboxes to be added. So this one is essentially just a preference key to specify that full email address or to specify a domain to be added to Outlook for the Mac instead of the Office activation email address. You can lock it down now, so you can only add corporate accounts. This can be kind of nice. Again, corporate-owned Macs, maybe you don't want people adding all their personal, their Outlook.com, their Gmail, all of those. This is another one with 16.8, where that preference key will only allow corporate email addresses now in Outlook on your Mac.
Yeah, so there's some interesting stuff that's going on here. So like you said, you got to watch out for versioning. So 16.17 has some features where 16.18 introduces some of the new lockdown and things that are going to be ready to go there as well. And there's another preference key in 16.18 that's been introduced that allows you to even hide the text about things like personal accounts. So not only can you lock it down and say, hey, they can only add these types of accounts, but you can make it more clear that here's the way this tooling is intended to be used. So if you're deploying Macs today and this is something you deploy, it doesn't really change, you know, the way you deploy them. But now what you can do is you can set all of these preference keys for these particular things with macOS Configurator and use configuration profiles. And then as those configuration profiles are applied, those go ahead and update your tooling along the way. So they've got all the account stuff. And then what they did is they went on the other side and they also allow you to manage things like in-app preferences and some of the buttons and features that drive those as well. And these are some really good ones. So you think about something like account lockout. Like account lockout or, you know, restricting me to corporate accounts is really good. But then you say, well, what if they export an OLM or they do a big import in and then they do something else around that? So what you can do now is you can extend data protection into the application itself. And as long as you deploy the right preference keys, you can actually stop things like import and export of PSTs and OLMs, which is absolutely awesome, because it was kind of a big gap out there. Like I said, if you sit down and think about the way this stuff's actually used. They also added a new feature for managing signatures. So if you're using maybe something like Exclaimer, you're doing server-side signatures in any way, shape, or form, you can actually 100% disable client-side signatures. So stop everybody from adding that in there, and it just goes through whatever your solution on the other side is, which just makes your email a lot cleaner. Yes. You don't end up with those big stacks of weird things at the bottom.
Yeah, and it looks like all these two are also CF preferences compatible. So if you're even doing something like Jamf Pro or using some of those management, the device management software for Mac, these also can all be pushed out that way, configured that way. So really trying to help out there from that admin side. If you're using device management software, if you just want to go in and configure it with your Mac configurations, lots of options there. So there's a few blog posts we can link to about all the preferences, how you set them, what you configure, what the keys are, data types, values. And then they do also, it is nice in that link, they do contain to the availability of, hey, this is the preference, this is the version of Office for Mac you have to be on in order to use it. Most of it is configuration, looks like a lot of it's all 16.18. When you get into more of the preferences, like you said, online meetings, signatures, that type of stuff, some of that's more 16.19. And there's even a few in here too that they didn't call out in that blog post, or unlike setting first day of the week, all that type of stuff.
Yeah, no, it's getting a little bit richer, and it's still not GPO, so you've still got all the replication or potential duplication and things that go on with that. But it is always good to see additional options, especially when it comes to the Mac, because it's been lagging for a little while.
Yeah, so another protection one that We talked about this a little bit when we were talking about Intune and more specifically SharePoint before, where in Intune, you can set up various conditional access policies to restrict access to cloud-based apps. And with SharePoint in particular, they had that option to restrict it using app-enforced restrictions, which for SharePoint meant, hey, you can block people from being able to download files out of SharePoint to their local machines, to machines that weren't trusted, etc. They're starting to roll this out now for Exchange Online as well. So we have conditional access in Outlook on the web for Exchange Online. And a lot like you did it with SharePoint, where you can use app-enforced restrictions for SharePoint, now you can use app-enforced restrictions for Exchange Online. And this does things like, once you have it all set up, non-compliant devices will have that same type of limited access where you won't be able to download attachments out of an email on the web to your local machine. You still have that option to like save them over to OneDrive, but really lock down that web-based version of Outlook so the data stays within your tenant. People can't just go to a Microsoft store, an Apple store, log into OWA and download it to the computer in the store, or download it to their computer at home. It really helps you keep control of that data, make sure, especially for data that's confidential or people that may use multiple machines, work remotely, that you stay in control of your data and keep a little bit better handle on it.
Yeah. So this is, you know, like you said, a new feature that's out there. If you don't have conditional access today, it does require Azure Active Directory P1, so premium license or higher. So, you know, you've got to have the equivalent EMS or whatever that you need out there to get it up and running. But it's all sitting there and ready to go and kick up. It does require a little bit of configuration. So it's the conditional access side of things. You'll apply mailbox policy with PowerShell. They don't have any plans to bring that to the admin center at this time. So you'll definitely want to go out and kind of read the documentation and run through it and understand what's going on there and how it's going to be applied and how you can back it out in case it's not actually doing what you want it to do.
You mean sometimes protection of your data does that?
No, that never happens.
They never put warnings in those to say, be careful, you could actually lock yourself out of your tenant.
Actually, they do. So in all the configuration guides now, when you go through, one of the very first things they tell you before they go through like any example of a rule is make sure that you have an exclusion either for yourself or a group of users or whatever it happens to be. And that's going to become more and more crucial over time. So one of the downsides, just to kind of take a quick aside to conditional access, is the way conditional access is actually evaluated in the authentication and kind of authorization pipeline. So it's only evaluated post-authentication. So for users, that means they have to type in their username and password before they're evaluated for a conditional access policy. So if you think about a conditional access policy for, let's block a user based on location, you know, I don't want to allow logins from certain parts of Africa or China or whatever it happens to be. Those aren't actually evaluated until a user puts in a username and password, which is kind of crazy. So Microsoft is going to be changing that a little bit, or at least they plan to. So there's been a user voice out there for this for a long time, where they're going to start thinking about evaluating conditional access before a user is logged in for the conditions where those might be applicable. So it's going to become more and more and more crucial that you do have exclusions and don't lock yourself out in bad ways.
Yeah, that would not be good. I've actually seen that pop up too in a few spots in conditional access where they will say, hey, you're making the setting change. Be careful.
Yeah.
You might lock yourself out.
Yeah. No one can really help you fix it if you do it too bad.
Yes.
So.
Hi, I'm Steve Peschke and I'm one of the founders at Office365Mon.com. I worked at Microsoft for over 18 years, and one of the most common questions I got is, how do I know what's going on with the health of my Office 365 tenant? When there's a problem with your tenant, you need to know what's going on before your users. We help you understand not only when your tenant goes down, but how well it's performing. When you do have a problem, where do you start looking? Is it your network? Is it your tenant? Is it some feature inside of Office 365? Our network analysis features can pinpoint performance issues and help you figure out where those bottlenecks are. Sign up for a free 90-day trial today at office365mon.com. Stay in the know and stay in control with office365mon.com.
So there was one other small Intune announcement too that came out recently around device-based subscriptions for shared resources. This was another one of those that they've probably needed it for a while. When you go back to the Office 365, Microsoft 365, like we've talked about before, it all tends to be licensed on a user basis. So this user is licensed for 5 machines to use Office, to install, to manage with Intune, what have you. But as larger corporations or even smaller corporations that have more of the kiosk type computers, maybe this is computers in the conference room, or more of those shared resources, they've started to come out with some additional licensing for those shared resources that are device-based. So now Intune has a new device-based subscription that you can go get this Intune device SKU, license it per device per month, where it's not tied to that specific user. So that kiosk that all of your employees use, or that computer in the conference room that isn't assigned to a specific user and you still want to manage it, protect it with Intune, you can go out and get this device-based license now for that shared device.
Yeah, so there's a couple of things that are important to call out with this one. So, you know, can't stress enough that you said the word device-based subscription about 100 times, and never once did you say user as a part of that. So these are strictly 100% device-based. They don't allow you to use any user-based security or management features. So if you think about things like, some of those email policies, you want to lock down calendars. We were just talking about conditional access in Outlook on the web. That is 100% a user-based feature. That is not a device feature. Even things like app protection policies are on a user-by-user basis. So if you're doing any kind of MAM or mobile application management, same kinds of things apply there. It's also not meant to be used where a device might be managed through the user on the device. So what I mean by that is they actually don't want the SKU to be used for anything where you're going to do any type of these user-based filterings or controls on it. So if you're doing just device-based, awesome, go for it. Anytime you introduce a user, the expectation from the Microsoft side is that the device SKU won't be used and that you'll just use the user licensing there. And if you think about it, that's a good thing because now you don't have to double dip, right? Like, let's go ahead and get the right license that we need at the time that we need it. So if you're doing kiosks, great scenario, whether they're like Windows-based kiosks, maybe you're doing Android kiosks, whatever it happens to be. Or if you're doing a ton of bulk enrollment. So think about maybe Windows Autopilot or something like that. You know, your devices don't require any type of affinity to a user or to a set of users. You're not worried about user-based enrollment. You don't need the Intune company portal, conditional access, any of that stuff. Go ahead and grab this. Awesome. Lower your cost and, you know, you should be better off and ready to go. But you are going to have a pretty decent think about the features that you use. And you're going to have to know whether they're actually user or device-based features. And as soon as you cross the line and you start mixing user and device, you need to be in a user licensing SKU.
Yep. And like you said, some of those email, just to give some examples, they call out some of the blog posts as like anything around email, calendaring, conditional access. Those all are those user-based, where this SKU was going to come in handy more as when you're doing enrollment methods for those kiosks, something like the Autopilot or Google Zero Touch enrollment with these devices, where, again, there's no user affinity, there's no user data, user applications. That's where these device-based subscriptions are really going to come into play.
Yeah. So if you're interested, reach out to your resident licensing expert or whoever you use to procure your Microsoft licensing. It doesn't I haven't seen it in any of the tenants yet, just for purchase through the portal. So you might be stuck with like a licensing partner to go ahead and pick those up. So, and I'd imagine this is meant more for enterprise anyway, than just some of the kind of smaller deployments of Office that are out there.
Yep, I agree. So moving on from management, we have some stuff to help you build your modern intranet, some SharePointy stuff around fancy new look and feel stuff in SharePoint.
Yeah. So Microsoft has done a bunch with the design of intranet, or SharePoint rather, over the years. We just had a discussion and an interview with Adam Levithan a couple weeks ago back at Ignite. So that episode recently came out. If anybody's interested in a take on kind of intranets as a service and how you can think about deploying them and pushing them out there, what they're doing is saying, hey, we've got this new modern SharePoint thing where we've got web parts and SPFX and all of these new features and functionality that we've pushed out. And, you know, they're starting to bring back audience targeting, and they fixed up some of the hero web parts and custom links and things like that. So what they did is they've built out a new resource center for building modern intranets, specifically on SharePoint Online in Office 365. You know, that's definitely kind of the target for this. They've got a bunch of different case studies out there. They've got how-to guidance, which includes resources for maybe building site designs, how to think about rationalizing permissions, maybe the navigation within your sites, right? Do you do hub sites? Do you do communication sites? Do you team sites? Do you modern team sites? How do you tie all that together and think about that? And then they also added an offering to Fast Track. So for customers who are brand new to Office 365, or you're already maybe working through Fast Track, there is a new program where you can request assistance from partners to potentially help you build out an intranet on Office 365, which is super duper cool.
Yeah. Modern UI, the resources Microsoft's providing, you can do some really cool intranet stuff now without really writing any custom code, going out and building custom solutions and all that. I really like where they're going with the modern UI and what you can do.
Yeah, no, it's nice, right? It's compelling. If you're already paying for it, it's built in. So it's kind of like free as in beer at that point to get things built out and pushed to where they need to be. And this isn't saying that you are not going to have to build things. This is just saying, hey, there's a set of guidance out there to help you understand the way others are doing this through case studies, and also the ways that Microsoft is thinking about these systems and how you might want to align to the way Microsoft is thinking about them, because there's going to be way less friction for you as you get deeper into these kind of things. You can certainly still go and deploy a 100% custom intranet. You could purchase an intranet in a box product. Nobody's saying those things still can't happen. This is just saying, here's the way Microsoft thinks about it and how you could potentially align and get better ROI for, you know, what you're spending on these workloads.
Yep. Like, stop creating subsites under site collections. Did you know you can turn that off now?
Yeah. I missed that one. Admin controls.
Yes. Yeah, you can now disable, not allow anybody to create subsites. Kind of nifty. Anyways, if you are going to build stuff, Microsoft also has released recently, this is towards the end of October, the new SharePoint view formatting samples are now available in the Microsoft 365 Resource Center. So previously we had, they called it column formatting, where you could go in, write some JSON, and apply certain formatting to a specific column in a SharePoint list. So you could highlight it, you could add icons into it, you could do all kinds of fun stuff. This is something they announced back at the SharePoint conference last May, was that they were going to extend that. So now you could actually format the whole row. So color code an entire row instead of just a single column. And they have taken this to way beyond just the color coding and some of that. You can completely, essentially redesign how a item looks in a SharePoint list. So they have a blog post out here with some examples that show screenshots, desktop, if you're on a mobile device, what you can do with a document library. So you can even break this out now, so it's not even in that traditional column view. You can put like multiple rows of your columns stacked on top of each other, and then a big old icon on the right to show like if documents are pending, approved, rejected. Looks like there's all kinds of stuff you can do. And then they also have a link out to that resource center where there's a whole bunch of different templates and downloads for various themes, various products. So it's beyond just the SharePoint view formatting, but they've started including those templates in there now. So you can start customizing your list views, document library views, and SharePoint. Take them to a whole nother level than you could ever do before.
Yeah, it's all good stuff. And again, it's always nice to see the examples from Microsoft and the guidance and the way they build things through. And then, you know, certainly go out and if this is something you're interested in, catch up on PMP or Patterns and Practices and see some of the things they've been releasing over there as well, just to understand where it's all going and what you can potentially do within your environment.
Yeah. Definitely. When it comes to email, Outlook and Office 365 are fantastic. But sometimes there are things you'd like to do that aren't implemented. Sperry Software creates Outlook add-ins and Office 365 services that fill in these gaps. For instance, there are Outlook add-ins to automatically print emails and/or attachments, save emails to PDF, send out recurring emails, or how about a warning when you're going to do a reply to all instead of a normal reply? Find these and many more email productivity solutions. Get started today by visiting www.sperrysoftware.com/cloudit. Well, I think that about does it. Wrap it up. Call it a day and start getting ready. I got to go do my slides. Speaking of, we should promote it because people should use my code, not your code, for the Live 360 conference that we're going to be doing. And it's like a month away now.
It is. Yeah. Your slides are due soon if you haven't done them. Got to get those in.
1 week. But
yeah. By the time this one goes out, the kind of early bird discounts will have ended for that conference. But that being said, there is still a discount that is available. So, you know, what I'll do is I'll make sure that I put both of our discount codes in the show notes and maybe we'll see whose gets used more.
Used more? We can have a little competition, find out which one of us is more popular.
Yes, something like that. Or who just doesn't click the stuff. But yeah, Live 360 is December 2nd through the 7th. It is actually 6 conferences in one. So it's SharePoint Live, Office 365 Live, and then there's also things like Tech Mentor that's there. And you've got also Visual Studio Live and just a bunch of different things going on. So the nice thing about that conference is you buy one pass and then you can flip in and out of different things. So it's one of my favorite ones to go to every year because, you know, I play around a little bit with Office 365, but not as much as I used to. I do way more in Azure. So I can actually, you know, dip into the Office 365 sessions that interest me. And then I can just walk across the hall and I can sit in technical sessions on Azure as well, all on the same pass without having to go anyplace else or do anything else. And it's not like a huge, you know, 40,000 person conference. It's pretty small, a couple thousand folks, nice and close together. So it is sometimes just as easy as walking across the hall and you can be in a totally different conference and a totally different space.
Yep, definitely. And it's in Orlando in December when it's cold and snowy and gross up north. So you can come escape for a week in the nice warm, well, I won't say comfortable. It's still warm weather in Orlando in December.
Yeah, it is comfortable. We'll leave it at that.
Okay, sounds good. All right. Well, thanks a lot, Scott. Enjoy the rest of your day, and we will talk to you later.
All right. Thanks, Ben.
If you enjoyed the podcast, go leave us a 5-star rating in iTunes. It helps to get the word out so more IT pros can learn about Office 365 and Azure. If you have any questions you want us to address on the show or feedback about the show, feel free to reach out via our website, Twitter, or Facebook. Thanks again for listening and have a great day.